Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Joe, we are back with the conclusion of the cliffhanger from last week. and unlike when there was a shooting and they kind of kept us on the hook for an entire episode of was he going to die or not, we get the he died basically like a minute into this episode.
Yeah.
Now, it's raised a question that I have for you, Joe.
Do you want to ask me if it's the series wrap on Johnny?
Well, yeah, let's start with that. Is this the series wrap on Johnny?
Yes.
He doesn't come back as like a forced ghost later on to guide Marissa?
You know what? I don't think so. You know, I think he just comes back as like a regular demon, like a regular one of Marissa's demons.
Just one of her many demons? Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so here's my question for you. Is California a bad theme song for this show? Because I think that more times than not, the music opening is far too cheery for how dour most of the cold openings to this show are.
Yeah.
Like literally on this one, it is Ryan holding a crying Marissa as she just found out that her friend died from falling off of a cliff, and then immediately it's like it is such a insane tone shift most of the time.
I mean, you got to figure that at that time though, like, I mean,
I think they need a second theme. I think they need a sadder version.
They need
of the California
sad version
theme. Yeah. Well, the one that played when they got kicked out of school.
you got to figure that, like, this is also the time of what, CSI Miami, right? Like, this is that age of television where, you know, witty one-liner and then But and that's like literal people are dying. Like every episode there's death in that. This is going to sound so delusional, but just go with me. I think that the theme works when the context is there, right? Like the theme, it's like, oh, when it's a serious show, like if you're not binging it week to week, right? And it does allow, like, and you got to also think about it from the structure of this type of TV show at the time. That it allows the audience to breathe or to be like, what? In between commercials.
Let me use this as an example. Again, I'm going to talk about my favorite show of all time because boy, do I love it. But the Scrubs theme, I think, is a perfect theme for that show because it somewhat fits the mood, whether it's a funny cold open or a serious cold open. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, it's like if it ends on a dour, sad moment, like Dr. Cox has shown up to the hospital drunk because he's so overwhelmed with depression from killing 5 patients in a single day. Like, hearing that, I can't do this all on my own, like, still fits just as much as if the cold open is like them having a giant parade to celebrate the fact that like Turk and Carl are expecting a baby. You know what I mean? Like it works on the happy and the sad. I feel like the OC theme only works if it's a joyful cold open, and the more depressing that it continues to get every single season, the more like jolting this like very happy piano piece is.
Yeah.
While we're talking about this, did not expect most of this episode to be a full-blown funeral planning episode. So that was wild to find out that that's what the first half of this episode is. And a big shout out to fuck you, Seth Cohen. The worst read of a room I've ever seen in my entire life, when he looks at Ryan and just says, well, I guess you don't have to worry about Johnny coming between you and Marissa anymore. Like, hey, there's a thought that you just keep in your head and don't verbalize to anybody ever again. Like, the worst.
These two episodes are like, oh, this is why I hate this season so much. This is why, like, and I was like watching it last night. I was watching 15 last night. I made the mistake of getting really high, and I was like, are we still, is this episode still going? Like, I was fully expecting once the funeral happened to be like, oh, it's almost over. And it's that thing when you do cannabis, especially, you know, depending on the strain, but it's that thing when you do cannabis where you don't exactly know what, like,
no. Time is flowing. I'm not letting you blame this on cannabis, because I watched this stone sober, and I swear to God, the two episodes we watched for today's recording felt like I watched seven episodes. It felt so long. Like, there was a point where I was like, all right, we got to be close to wrapping this up. And I hit like the button to see how much time was left. And there was 23 minutes left in this episode. I had just watched 20 minutes of an episode, and it felt like a full 45. This episode is drawn out, and it's that, like, it's weird because it's that combination of the OC, like, doing seven episodes in a single episode, but like, but it also somehow in this episode feels like it has the pacing as if they stretched it out amongst seven episodes, like a normal show. Like, it feels long. A lot of the time, the OC, when they do like these six episodes in one, you almost feel like you're in a car crash because you're getting so much like neck break speed of plot line moving. And this one was somehow multiple plot lines and slow as fuck the whole time. Like, this was rough. This episode was one of the less enjoyable watches I've had in a while. And it's not even that it's like a bad episode. It's just a very overly extended experience is what we'll say. Also, here's another thing. I have to read this note because this like really bothered me.
Oh, but this did. Tell me.
Kirsten and Julie are having this debate about canceling a Valentine's Day dance because of the death of a kid who genuinely only affects their kids and no one else in Newport Beach. Like I was like thinking about this, and I'm like, no one that this dance is for even knows who the fuck Johnny is.
Yeah.
Except for your children. And you're honestly like, I feel like we may have to cancel the dance. And it's like, hey, here's a hot take. Have the dance and just don't force your kids to attend it. Like, like just say like, hey, we're throwing this dance because it's Valentine's Day and that's what we do in this community. But don't feel like you have to make an appearance. I know you're going through a lot. Like, if you want to sit this one out, I totally get that. No pressure whatsoever. Like, it's just, but like, there are moments in this where I'm like, how am I a better parent than any member of the Cohen or the fucking Cooper family? Like, they're making parenting seem easy.
Yeah.
By some of their decision making sometimes.
Yeah, it's not great. It's also like, what do the problems of, like, you know, the unwashed, like, other OC elite, you know, not non-OC elite matter to, like, the people that would go to the fucking party? You know what I mean? Like,
well, and also when we're at the end of the episode, when we're finally at the dance, there's more adults there than kids. Like, it actually seems like it's just a community dance that old heads go to.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, again, why would these four kids going through, like, admittedly a rough time, like, it's not, like, a great circumstance for anyone involved, mm-hmm. but, like, then finally just don't show up at the dance. It doesn't look like they're seen anyway based on the crowd that's there.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Something I did really like is I like the Summer Seth aspect, specifically that Summer, we've been led to believe for three episodes that Summer's going to be mad at Seth because he smokes pot. Mm-hmm. And finally, we get Summer verbalizing, like, I don't care if you're smoking pot, like, whatever. It's that you lied to me multiple times about smoking pot. And, like, the obvious thing of, like, if you're going to lie to me about something so insignificant as that, like, how can I trust that you're not lying to me about a multitude of other things in my day-to-day life?
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
It's smart. That's, like, smart scripting. I feel like Summer's one of the only characters where I genuinely, and everyone told me this, like, her growth is probably the best character arc in the entire show, but, like, I also think that that's because the writers actually seem to give her logical, I'd say 9 times out of 10 her stuff is a logical way that a human being would react,
yeah,
to a thing, almost to the point that, like, so I've been listening to the Simpsons commentary tracks all the time now these days, and they talk about, like, one of their favorite things to do in The Simpsons, and it's only been in a couple episodes. Homer's Enemy is one. There's one where, like, Steve Martin is, like, the head of the garbage disposal committee or whatever.
Sure.
And they're like, we love when we do these storylines where essentially we drop a, like, the George Bush episode is a great example too, mm-hmm. where we drop a normal person who acknowledges how insane the rest of the inhabitants of Springfield are.
Yeah.
and like that. And he's like, and ultimately 9 times out of 10, that becomes their demise because they can't go with the flow of Springfield. So then they get, like, rejected by the city. Mm-hmm. But it's like, Summer to me is that person.
Yeah.
I feel like Summer is the only person who has some element of awareness of how outrageous their lives are, mm-hmm. which we'll get into the cold opening next week, which kind of is equally ridiculous, but whatever. They really set, if you were wondering when this episode was filmed and shot, boy, do you get a timely Da Vinci Code reference just tossed into the dialogue. And I literally said, man, the Da Vinci Code really, really sets the time and place of when this episode came out.
Yeah.
Because talk about a thing that was, like, everybody was talking about it, and then mm-hmm. just as quickly, it was a forgotten thing that yeah. that everyone was obsessed with briefly.
Yeah, yeah.
Not unlike the OC itself. Yeah,
I was going to say, not unlike the show that we're watching. What I love is that, like, I fully remember being that kid in, like, middle school that read the Da Vinci Code.
I read it freshman year of college. I was working at a job in the mall that nobody came to. It was like a head shop. But, like, it was in a tie. I know, it's delightful that I worked at a head shop.
Yeah,
I'm, it was like they sold, it was just like tie dye posters, hemp bags, and, like, incense burners.
Of course.
But it was, you know, I was working in a mall in 2005 as the mall scene was completely dying around you. Mm-hmm. And I exclusively worked weekdays during the fall and spring, which is to say that the main customers did not show up during my shift ever. Mm-hmm. And the store was, like, right across the hallway from a Barnes and Noble. So I would literally just show up at work, read a book. As soon as the book was finished, I would go on my lunch break, close up shop, grab something to eat, walk into the Barnes and Noble, buy a new book, open up the shop, and then just read through that book as well. Like, I was just like, I was crushing, like, easily 7, sometimes 8 or 9 books a week.
Wow.
Because I was just sitting there reading, like, full books during a shift.
Just crushing books.
Just crushing books. Like a truly nerdy 19-year-old boy would do. But Da Vinci Code was definitely among the, like, books that I distinctly remember grabbing and reading because the movie was just about to come out. So I was like, oh, let me read this right before this movie comes out. Let's talk about three things. There's three things that I think are the main stuff we have to talk about in this book.
Okay, tell me.
I'll read my last note. I never thought I'd see the day, but Chili is dead and all hail Dennis. So Chili kind of drops his dumb nickname. He goes back to his original name. Mm-hmm. I have to ask. I think it's not, but I imagine that from this point forward, Chili is just going to slowly be phased out and like have a very unceremonious series wrap on his character.
You're right in that, like, I also don't remember if we ever see him after this.
Yeah, like, I think that there might be a scene that he possibly could show up in, but I'm pretty sure this scene at the fire, that felt like also a goodbye to this character.
Yeah.
To me.
How many more episodes are left in this season?
There are 25, so nine or ten more.
God, that's like an entire life.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah, I know. I'm pretty sure that we're done with Chili. Dennis, formerly Chili.
So I also fleshed this out, Joe. I was looking at everything since we were bringing it up. Mm-hmm. The last episode we will watch the last week of June of this season. Mm-hmm. I think because you and I are both going to be at San Diego Comic-Con in July and a bunch of other stuff, I think we've earned the month of July off. and then we'll tackle these last 16 episodes of season 4 starting in August to wrap up the show. I think both of us could use this. Has been a very testing season, so I think publicly I'm saying we're going to take a month break in the month of July just to like not think about these people.
God, for a little bit, Matt. Yeah, just, you know, no. Yeah. No.
Yeah.
Just a thousand times. We need it. We need it. This is very fright school of you, Matt. Like, we're just going to take a break.
Listen. Well, because I'm like, it's not like this show's going for 10 years or anything. Like, we're going to be done at the end of this year anyway. So as long as we finish before December, I feel like we've achieved our goal of doing this in 2 years. So why not give ourselves a break?
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
Hello, everyone. We're Superhero Stuff You Should Know. And if you think you know about superheroes and comic books, think again.
We got romance. We got action.
Romance.
We got comedy. We got everything you need, man. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know for all your superhero needs.
I don't know about this romance. What part are you talking about?
We've got all kinds of sketches and then deep dives on top of that. Come on down to Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
All right. So come on down to... Wait, why did I say come on down? To Superhero Stuff You Should Know.
But the next note I have... And I do have a slight spoiler for myself on this one.
Oh.
I know that it is not a series wrap on Caitlin, but it seems like it might be potentially a season wrap on Caitlin, as we've kind of just found her an exit from this story, that the guy who in the very first Caitlin episode seemed like a total douchebag is somehow the knight in shining armor that comes and saves her from the drama of Newport Beach. And the only note that I wrote that mentions Caitlin at all just said, God, even when she's grieving, I find Caitlin unbearable.
Yeah. Also, like, I kind of don't. I think I'm really giving the show too much credit here.
Yeah.
But I feel like it makes sense given how young she is, right? Like, what, she's 16? Yeah. So she's like 16, has been playing these games with Johnny, you know, batting him around like a cat bats a toy. And then it ends with him not in love with her, right? In love with, yep. fully in love with Marissa. And it's just like, it was annoying because it's like, let's make this guy's death all about you, right? Like, in
yeah,
the way
that's
that, like,
exactly what, yeah. When Ryan's trying to talk to her by the beach, that's the exact moment when I wrote that her grieving is unbearable. Where she's like, this is, everyone's going to think this is my fault. And it's like, no, they're going to think Marissa hired Ryan to kill him.
Yeah. Like,
and that leads me to the final person that we need to talk about. Sadie. Person who, as soon as she showed up, ugh. I clocked as, well, this person seems like potential trouble. And the first thing that happens with her is she's talking to Marissa. And she gives Marissa this gift that Johnny had commissioned for her. And I wrote down the following sentence. And maybe I'm just too close to something similar to this in my life. But I wrote, that is a wildly inappropriate gift to give someone who has repeatedly told you that they are not interested in you. Is a what seems to be a very expensive necklace with a giant heart in the center with your, like, names.
With both your birthstones.
With your birthstones and an angel. Like, I was just like, what the fuck, Johnny?
I truly cannot even, Matt. Like, it's just, it is very, it's giving middle school, right? It's giving when I was in middle school in eighth grade and my friend, who I wouldn't realize until later, I was, like, basically in love with. He was looking to get a gift, a meaningful gift for this girl that he was interested in. And this girl was also, like, kind of my frenemy. And he went to a fucking jewelry store. And this is when I realized that some people had more money than me. And he went to, like, a jewelry store and bought, like, a gold, like, a legit gold necklace for her, fully in eighth grade, fully in middle school. And it's like, dude, like, spoiler alert, they are not married today.
Yeah, it was shocker that a love relationship from eighth grade didn't last. The only other thing that we need to talk about is this weird, messy-ass Valentine's Day plot of Sandy and Seth mixing up their Valentine's Day gifts for their respective girlfriends, which kind of goes nowhere. Like, it's like a quick throwaway joke, and then they just kind of move on with both subplots. But yeah, just wanted to mention that as a thing that happens in this episode.
It's also like, of course you put it right next to it. Of course it's going to like, what did we expect, right? We know exactly what's happening.
Yeah, we're not here to give the writers of the OC a ton of credit on their originality today.
Yeah.
Because this was not an episode that earned originality points.
No, absolutely not.
But that's fine. That's fine. Joe, let's talk about some music in this episode. We kick off this episode with Sufjan Stevens, for The Widows in Paradise, which plays during Johnny's funeral. Rocky, I'm going to try this name, Vodolato with White Daisy Passing, which plays when Justin sees Caitlin at an event. Fun random fact I learned about that is that this Rocky guy is brothers with the guitarist of the Blood Brothers, which, like, musically could not sound different from each other. Like, the Blood Brothers is like a chaotic screamo kind of queer metal band, and this was like folksy weirdness. Electric President Grand Machine number 12 plays during Johnny's wake when everyone's at the bake shop. And then lastly, Paul Gorgon's Funk Hop plays during the Valentine's Day dance. Joe, why did you pick Sufjan Stevens? Because it was the only memorable noteworthy song.
I mean, honestly, I was going to pick Phantom Planet. Because I was like, I don't really care for Sufjan Stevens. I'm not gay like that.
I am gay like that because I love me some Sufjan
Stevens. God, you're such a F slur. Like, leave that in, Matt. You better fucking leave that in.
Of course I will. listen, man, what can I tell you? Soufjin definitely represents a period in time where I was listening to lots of Christian music. He somehow was breaking into the mainstream with his weird indie music, and he was definitely one of the weirdest people releasing music and playing at Christian music festivals.
Yeah.
And then he pissed off a bunch of people by saying fucking shit in one of his albums. And I was like, I'm all in on Soufjin Stevens now.
He's also like a giant homosexual.
Is that for sure or a theory? I don't know.
Sure, he was gay. Yeah. Well, he recently, like, his most recent album is dedicated to his partner who passed away.
Okay. Well, yeah, I wrote down Soufjin Stevens because as soon as I heard that weird banjo, before he even sang a word, I'm like, ooh, Soufjin Stevens. Like, I just instantly clicked. Joe, what was it that you referred to me as? Because it's going to continue in this next segment.
Oh, yes, you F slur, you giant F slur.
Okay, so for my pop culture promo, I'm going to talk about a romance novel I read by Alyssa Thompson called With Love from the Cold War.
Oh, my God.
Now will I say
she couldn't get the rights to From Russia with Love?
I guess not. Or from the Cold Worlds, not the Cold War, the Cold World.
Okay.
It is definitely a straight romance novel, but that didn't mean it didn't turn me on when I read it. It's a love story between two people who work at an amusement park in California. That's whole thing is that it's the only place in California where you can see snow, and and they hate each other, but they're both tasked to come up with a way to save the business from crumbling. And of course, one of my favorite romance story tropes, enemies become lovers.
Do love an enemies to lovers trope, don't you?
Truly do, and man, did I rip through this book in literally a day and a half. I can't stand
enemies to lovers. I'd rather have I cannot, because it's like it's so obvious where this is going to end up, and I don't even care about the middle.
Joe, let me ask you a question. Who reads romance novels to not know how it's going to end up? Like, that's I've said this before. The comfort in reading YA and romance novels to me is that I know exactly where it's going, and I'm just there for the ride. It's like watching a slasher movie. I don't need twists and turns. I just need to see a bunch of horny teenagers get killed by a person in a mask, and it could be Jason Voorhees for 13 films, or it could be a slight mystery of who's behind the ghost face mask. I will love it just the same because it's hitting the trope beats that I am there for.
No, I disagree. I think that to your point, right? I understand, and romances, yeah, and rom-coms, like, I watch them as well. But like in book form, enemies to lovers is just like, it's exhausting. And I say that as someone who, like, the biggest one of the defining pieces of culture for me last year was reading Red, White, and Royal Blue, and then like watching the series, which is fully enemies to lovers, but it's also like it's added underneath the complexity. Underneath is the complexity and the subtlety of the fact that, like, why am I obsessed? He doesn't even know why he's obsessed with him.
Yeah.
Right. Like,
no, that's fair.
That because there's pieces of identity that are playing into it.
And I still need to read that. I saw that the other day when I was doing some YA book shopping, and that was sitting on the book talk pile.
Yes.
And I thought, Joe raves about this. I should grab this.
You should. It's also really horny, and you will. I mean,
got no problem with that. I love a good horny romance novel.
Yeah. You F slur. You're going to fucking love it.
All right. Well, so what's your pop culture promo, as I've outed myself as being a fan of the smutty romance novel?
So my I'm going to tell you what inspired it, and then I'm just going to go into, like, I'm just going to go what that that'll be like the basis of it. But it's really kind of like there's a culture from a time period, and that's very relevant to our show. So a few months ago, Las Culturistas had a surprise guest that they've been teasing out for a while on their podcast, and they had Mandy fucking Moore come on.
Love it.
They found out that Mandy Moore is a listener of their show, like organic listener of the show, and they were teasing that, like, they were trying to get her on. It worked out with everybody's schedules. They bring her into the studio. You can also watch this on YouTube. And it proceeds to be like a Mandy Moore early aughts, like, love fest. Talking about, like, So it made me like re-look at, listen like to the my favorites of her music. And mm-hmm. the song that's my absolute favorite song of hers is I Wanna Be With You.
Okay.
And like, oh, and then it like triggered in me like, oh fuck, I remember this as being like one of the songs on a Now album that like really spoke to me as like a budding queer boy. And it's just like the earnestness and the longing of like wanting, I wanna be with you if only for one night. And I'm like, ooh, okay, for if only for one night.
Yeah.
And then what that turned into, Matt, was me like listening to early aughts like bubblegum teeny bopper like so like
love
that
it.
And then
love
like,
it
Don't Let Me Be the Last to Know by Britney Spears, which is my favorite Britney Spears song, maybe sometimes is like just edges it out a little bit, but like when like Don't Let Me Be the Last to Know, being like a middle schooler who had like no idea about the feelings that I was having, was amazing to like have this whole thing. So I encourage y'all, if you're a millennial like me and Matt are, like go back and listen to the pop music from the spaghetti strap era, because it was
the
really
spaghetti strap era. I love that that's what you refer to it as, because that's a perfect way to pinpoint the time and place.
Exactly. It is. It's really. It's it. It just is good nostalgia. And like when it comes to nostalgia, I saw this thing on Instagram that really got to me, was that like the reason why nostalgia is so big, especially among like Gen Alpha and Gen Z, is because it's because they're living in a world where they know that they may not have a future.
Yeah.
I'm like, or something along those lines.
That's
I'm like,
not far off from the truth.
It really isn't far off from the truth. So, you know, let people have the things that they like. And
yeah. At one point, I think we kind of stepped away from it in the last couple of years, but for a very long period of time, the unofficial slogan of Geekscape was, it's okay to like things, which I think is a great message.
I mean, that's
to
how
continually
you got
get
me.
Out there.
That's how you yeah. got me and roped me in when we first met.
Yeah, I mean, it's the way to live your life. It's totally okay to just like things.
Let people have their things. Let people have, you know, what it is that they like.
Exactly. All right. Well, Joe, speaking of things that we like, not sure about my feelings on the OC still this far in, but we will be back to see if the things I like change to the OC with next week's episode, The Road Warrior.
Are you a fan of young adult novels?
Have you ever wondered the stories behind the people who wrote your favorite young adult novels?
Then join author Eric J. Brown
and Alyssa Lube of Netflix's The Circle
every other Tuesday on YAOK.
Available on all podcasting apps. Woo!
Hey, welcome to Unstable Topics, a fast-paced, jam-packed, unhinged bestie podcast filled with facts, reacts, and made-up games in between.
We're your hosts, Sarah
and Maggie,
and we're excited for you to join our best friend hangout, where we surprise one another with things we find interesting or hilarious just to see how the other will react.
Our friendship might be totally stable, but you never know what your bestie might throw your way to knock you off your game.
So come shake things up, learn something new, and laugh along with us. This is Unstable Topics.
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.